Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful.com here with a name you know. You might have known him as Aiden English, but you're going to know him as Matt Raywald. At least I hope that's how you're going to know him, because I don't know how to pronounce your name.
That's fine. It used to be one of my secret weapons. It was always how I could tell when a telemarketer was calling.
Oh, nice.
And the minute you pick up, hello, Mr. Reholt, it's like, goodbye, click.
Later. That's... Okay, I go by a three-person name, Sean Ross Sapp, and I know if somebody calls me Sean Sapp, they either have known me my entire life or they do not know me at all. So, like, that's mine. It's like, I do the three name gimmick, buddy. You gotta know this stuff. But you got a lot going on, man. It seems like every time that I see you post something, it's like, okay, there's a Twitch channel. All right, there's a YouTube channel. You're talking whiskey with Seamus. There's something going on all the time. With you.
I can't sit still. It's like, it's a blessing and a curse. I mean, it keeps me motivated, keeps me active, always wanted to do stuff, but like, yeah, I can't stop moving. I've always said I have a problem with, I can never, and this is what led me to wrestling, man. I can't just be like a fan of something and just like enjoy it. I have to go do it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just sit. I got to go and try and do something. It's always been a thing.
And it seems like when you do something, you're able to monetize it as well, which is pretty awesome. Like it seems like you go into it and you're like, all right, I could do this and maybe even make a living at doing this by the looks of it. Because I look up and down your channel and, like, it's produced well. You've got a ton of content. You've got a lot of different stuff on there. You've got interviews. You've got top five lists. There's a lot of stuff there.
I mean, it's just, that's just, I mean, that's all just me putting in the time. That's a good example. That's what passion can kind of get to you, can do for you, because it makes it like anything. It makes it so it's not work. And so that just becomes like second nature. And as far as like the wrestling with whiskey stuff, that was like, and I've said this before, but it was kind of like the only other thing outside of wrestling that I got that passionate about. And really quickly, only over the past like 2-3 years, and I've just really started to run away with it.
Yeah, it's been really cool to kind of see that. I think it was Dana Brooke I talked to last month, and she said that this time off, like, she almost felt guilty being at home, not traveling, not doing anything. This has been the first time you've probably been home for an extended period of time. I mean, I know you haven't been in the ring as much over the last year, but you've been traveling a lot for most of your adult life.
Yeah, no, that's probably one of the weirdest things too, is just this like stillness that I'm not used to. Yeah. Like, even when we first shut down, I think that was the first time in probably at least 4 years that I had been, that I had not traveled at least once, or, you know, been on a plane once or twice in a week in, yeah, years, man. So like, it's a weird, I'm getting used to the stillness, hence yeah. I'm doing 8 million things all the time to try to keep myself busy.
And that's like a common theme that I'm seeing among wrestlers during this period. They're like, I don't have anything to do, and this feels weird. Like, they don't have their next flight to catch. They don't have their next match to think about. They don't have promos to even, some of them do, some of them don't. But they don't have as much, and even the ones that do, they're going there for 2 days at a time, and they're not coming back for 2 weeks for tapings. Like, how different is this for you, based on the lifestyle that you have been living, forever?
I mean, yeah, it's the antithesis of everything I've done for the past couple of years, you know what I mean? Like, it literally, because not only do we live in a crazy just work schedule from planes to the rental cars to the hotels to the gym to the building, like, just the actual schedule is crazy, and then the environment in which we work, our actual working environment, is very frenetic. Yeah. The crowd, the cameras, lights, all this stuff. Then to go back and get on a plane to go home. Like the whole lifestyle job, everything is frenetic and moving. And then to just have it all go is very, at the risk of sounding a little doom and gloom, like it's almost unsettling in some ways for someone, you know, after years and years of doing that.
Well, you kind of burst on the scene, and a lot of people discovered you through the Vaudevillains, but you were in FCW for a while before they made the changeover. Have you seen the FCW documentary that WWE put together?
Oh, yeah. No, I did, and I loved it. I thought, I was wondering how in-depth they were going to be able to get, because like, it was such a weird and crazy time, and we were, you heard him say it, like so insulated and stuff. So I was like, are they going to get all the nuances, or is this just going to kind of gloss over, hey, look at old developmental?
Yes.
But I loved hearing the stories of the guys and kind of reliving some of the stuff that I got to be a part of, too. I thought it was really cool.
So you were a part of that transition over to NXT, too. And I remember when it happened, I was like, what are they going to do? They're going to take the name of this old like reality game show and make it a developmental territory? How will this work out? When that transition was happening, like, how did you feel as a person who was on that roster? Did you think that major changes were in store at that point?
Well, I mean, we had been hearing rumblings. So I came in right at the tail end of FCW. So I came in February of 2012, and by that summer, we were planning the transition already. Like, we were already hearing it. And then by the next year, we were moving and everything. And so within that first year I was there, there was rumblings of, yeah, hey, they're looking at places in Orlando. They're thinking about moving developmental. We're thinking about, I hear, you know, NXT, they're going to bring that name back in. So it was all like, almost like the fans here, we just heard the rumblings about it and everything. And it was exciting. It was a little nerve wracking. You hear a lot of the guys would tell the stories about like OVW and Deep South when FCW opened, like just, all right, I hear we're moving. Is this happening? And then you show up one day and they're like, all right, this is our last like day or two here. Everybody go find apartments in Orlando kind of thing. So it was a little bit like, when's the hammer going to drop? But then as they started to show us, I think when they started to show us like all the concepts for the performance center, when that actually like, hey guys, here's what it's going to be. That was like, oh, this isn't just skipping the rock to another developmental, you know, an hour down the road. Like, we're doing some crap here. Like, it was pretty cool. And I was actually lucky. I was one of the first people to go kind of get to tour it before it was, like, set in stone and everything was done. I got to kind of check it out a little bit. So once that stuff started happening, it was like, whoa.
How involved was Triple H in those early days with people like you who were developing and coming up with, did that come later on towards the end, or was he as involved early on as he is maybe today?
I mean, as far as I can tell, and I've obviously been regularly at NXT in a couple of years, but honestly, I think obviously it has increased, but even back then, I mean, he was the one coming to Tampa to tell us, to give us little bit, like, hey guys, here's where we're going to go. He was the one who was showing us the concepts for the performance center. He was leading us in the tours when we would go over there. He was there when we broke ground, all that kind of stuff. So like it is his baby. I mean, we all say that it is his thing. He wanted to take it from that FCW island unto itself, developmental, and turn it into what it is today. So, and he was there at every TV, every takeover. So while the production and the brand itself has grown, so his involvement has grown, he was always there on the ground floor.
So you all have the Vaudevillains gimmick. Was that a pitch that you all had, or was that brought to you? I mean, you had acting experience, you had studied acting. Of course, Simon had that look, that unique look that helped set it off as well. How did that come about?
So that, like, that's kind of a funny thing. So I've never gotten the full like detailed story, but the story we were pretty much told was, so I remember at the time I had just kind of finished up that run I was doing with the singing, and like I had a thing with Big Cast. We had a little thing back and forth, and so I had kind of finished that, and they were looking for things for me to do. And Simon was at the time, I believe, doing like the Rosebud kind of thing. He was out there part of that. And this, again, the story I'm told is that at NXT TV, Triple H had had seen Simon with his mustache, and I give him credit. He would always show up to television looking good, bow tie, the waxed up mustache. So he was always on gimmick. And so Hunter saw him and was like, that's such a unique look. Here's English over here. We're looking for something for him. And he's got this whole performer, singer, dancer, whatever kind of entertainment character. What is there something there? Is the story I was told. Basically, is there anything with those two as a team? And so Coach Isner kind of run up to us the next day, like, hey, this is an idea from the boss. Come up with a concept and we'll talk to like Dusty and people about it. And so we kind of just threw our hands up and said, okay. And everyone kept talking about vaudeville and black and white old school stuff. So I just went home and was like, vaudeville, what kind of vaudeville stuff? Well, we're going to be bad guys. I bet vaudevillains. That's cheesy and funny. Let's try it. And they loved the name. And we just kind of each week and day was just kind of picking it up from there.
So when you were told that, you were like, hell yeah, full steam ahead.
I mean, I wasn't sure because I had never, at that point, I was still so young in my career in general, let alone in NXT and WWE.
Didn't you get signed like after a few months of debuting?
I mean, I had my wrestling training. I paid to take Steve Kern's school that he was hosting basically on the side while running FCW. I moved down to Tampa to live in a stranger's house to take a 3-month course taught by Norman Smiley that, yeah. So,
wow.
I just took it because I'm like, I wanted to learn the WWE style and learn it from people who have been there. So Norman Smiley was the coach down there and we had a great relationship. 3-month course. I came home to Chicago and then 6 months later, I got in touch with TR got in touch with me and Norman called me and just said that he's like, I can't promise anything because they were asking about people from my classes I recommend. And I put you over and he's like, I don't know if anything will come of it, but he goes, be on the lookout. And sure enough, TR kind of kept in touch. I exchanged some stuff back and forth and they took, honest to goodness, they took a chance. Yeah. I was 6 months out of wrestling school and they took a chance on me and God, thank God they did. but so Vaudevillains was my first tag team. So I was a little like, how does this work? So yeah. This was new for me too.
So did you have a tryout or anything, or did they sign you based on the recommendation?
I mean, based on the recommendation, my communication, I never did.
That's amazing.
Yeah, grateful and like I wish I would have gone through it because I think it's a good experience. I never went through the cold dark matches at TV in front of the talent and you know that stuff that is nerve wracking. I've seen a lot of guys do it. That is a hard thing to do. So I absolutely don't envy anybody who has to go through that.
Yeah, like one of the things I love to do in my interviews is ask people about like extra work they do or enhancement matches. And when I was looking up more stuff on you, I was like, he got signed like. Real quick, like it was amazing. Like you sometimes you'll see people get recruited in and brought in cold to the performance center, but I mean, usually people that had wrestling experience, even they didn't get signed that quick. So that's kind of an amazing ascent right there. And so you were learning on literally learning on the job a whole lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, even after. In that time between when I left the wrestling school, left Norman Smiley and everything, and then got signed, I mean, again, it was 6-7 months, and I didn't know a whole lot about wrestling. I was here in Chicago wrestling, I think I was maybe once a month, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. at local shows here. So I wasn't getting a ton of extra experience. No, like, I fully admit that, like, I had a great set of timing and... Like I said, I just had a great relationship with Norman to the point where he put me over and obviously it resonated with the right person and they took a shot.
You all were a part of like this just genesis in the NXT tag division because no disrespect to the Ascension, but a lot of times they would have to bring in like Too Cool or other teams to work with them during that reign. And then it's like right as soon as they came up, you had American Alpha and the Vaudevillains and Blake and Murphy and the Revival. And it was just this explosion that a lot of us had not seen in NXT. Was that like a concerted effort? Do you think that they said, okay, we got to switch things up and instantly make this tag team division something special? Or was it just happenstance?
I mean, it's the answer is kind of both. I mean, I think there was a concerted effort to kind of, all right, especially at, you know, the Ascension had such a long reign, which is great, but it's like, all right, at some point, we want some variety here. Like, this is cool to have a streak, but we need to introduce some new people. And so when they decided to, you know, take the championships off them, and they wanted, I think, reinvigorate the tag division, but then it also happened to be just kind of happenstance of, you know, again, Simon had gotten there, and now we have this unique presentation. Blake and Murphy were working, like, they were two guys looking for something, and they were working kind of on NXT house shows as kind of an unnamed tag team, just kind of just working. Then you have like the Revival, Dash and Dawson I will give them 100%. They were hardcore working to be what they've always claimed to be, which is the best tag team ever. They were working on that from day one. They wanted to do stuff like that. And then you had Enzo and Cass, which was this incredible pairing, this incredible entertainment unit. So it was a combination of timing, effort, and just magic.
I mean, obviously you and Simon have incredible work ethic. I mean, one of my favorite live experiences was I got to see, I think it was at the Arnold Sports Festival. I saw you all do a series of matches, and some of them were with American Alpha as singles. And I got to watch you all, like, do what you do, and you all obviously had a little more freedom there. And it was so cool to watch you all, like, perform and then go in and chain wrestle and then go back to the performance aspect of it. Meanwhile, like, you or Jason Jordan would be just cheesing it up with fans that were crowded around this ring. Like, it was such an amalgamation of everything that is pro wrestling. But have you, at that point in that performance center, did you ever see anybody and you were like, oh my God, that person's going to be a gigantic star. There's going to be no denying them. Like, they naturally had it, so to speak.
Ooh, that's really good. That's tough. There's guys like, I mean, you had like a Finn Balor who, I mean, obviously his resume preceded him, of course. Yeah. But, you know, I knew him as the wrestler, but as coming in, he had this, one of those people, presence, right? Fergal's just got this, when he turns it on, he's got that demeanor, that face and everything. Like, so it was just like, the guy's jacked, handsome, talented, like, and even though, like, he doesn't cut a ton of super long promos, but he has just this smoldering, like, presence. So, like, him, you knew it was like, he's going to blow through NXT. He's going to be a star. Kevin Owens, the same thing. He's got so much charisma, confidence, and attitude, and knows exactly who he is. And that's the thing. So many people in NXT, and I'm one of them, I fully admit it, everyone was figuring their stuff out, right? And so, but some of those guys came in, and like Kevin's a great example, knows who he is, sticks to it, and blows people away.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, he knows exactly who he is. And that comes from years of experience. And just, look, this is who I am, and you're going to love me or hate me, but it's going to work. It's going to get your attention.
It's always amazing to me how people like Kevin Owens, who anybody who's interacted with him knows he is a great person, like a wonderful moral compass or moral gauge in the wrestling industry. And he is able to play an asshole so fantastically. It's always really great to see that. And again, those Arnold Sports Festival shows, I got to see a little bit of that. Like, for example, Jason Jordan would be talking with a fan, and you would walk by that same fan, and they're like, Jason talked to me, and you would go, well, I'm not as nice as him. And then you would, like, walk off and heal him. Like, that stuff is, you would see everybody putting things together in NXT, and you would see these glimpses of what's to come. You had mentioned how Finn doesn't cut, like, super long promos. It seems like that has phased out quite a bit over the last couple of years. Like, we don't necessarily see, like, the 15-minute monologues. They're, like, 5-10 minutes. What do you think contributed to that? Or is that even something that's been on the radar, so to speak?
I mean, it could be a number of things. I would most likely attribute it to a lot of the stuff NXT has done over the last couple of years. They, you know, there was obviously a huge emphasis on in-ring action in NXT, mm-hmm. as opposed to maybe Raw or SmackDown, which often did start with those longer segments and stuff like that. And I think as NXT has exploded a lot because of all the in-ring talent and all the focus on long matches and athleticism and stuff like that, which the whole wrestling world was moving towards anyway. Mm-hmm. And so NXT was just broadening that and capitalizing on that. I think the whole company as a whole saw that and was like, okay, maybe a little bit more of this, a little less of this, and just kind of following that trend.
When you all were a part of those famed NXT promo classes, how did those focus? Did those focus on more short stuff, or did they focus on like long monologues, or maybe a bit of both?
So it depended. 9 times out of 10, though, a regular promo day or whatever you wanted to call it, Dusty, whatever, your typical thing was you got a minute, mm-hmm. right? That was his. There's leeway and stuff like that if you go 80 seconds or whatever. But I mean, he didn't like it, generally speaking, when people just went for 3-4 minutes, because his whole thing was like, you got the red light turns on, he goes, and we're on TV. You're lucky if you get a minute, like in a backstage or something like that.
We've got an elevator pitch.
Yeah. You go, yeah. You've got the light turns on, you got 60 seconds to tell me who you are and what you're doing. What's your goal, whatever the segment is, and get it across. It's economy of words. And emotion. So 9 times out of 10, it was minute promos. But every so often, we would do either skits or presentations that were a little bit different. But usually, 60 seconds was the button.
So you all got called up. What was your reaction to hearing that for sure it was happening? Because I know that you all had kind of heard, like, oh, this might be happening, because I know that Enzo and Cass were brought up too. But when you're told definitively, you're coming up, what was your reaction to that?
I mean, that was the moment. You're right. Like, usually around that time, you start to hear the rumblings of who's going to go. You get a feeling. Everyone's getting hints and stuff like that, but you don't know until you know. And that was also the time that they, I'm not sure if it was either the Breaking Ground or something, but they were filming some of the guys getting called up, like Enzo and Cass, you know, Hunter telling them and people like that. And so a lot of that would happen on either like the Friday or at NXT TakeOver the night before WrestleMania. Like, everyone kind of found out. Like, I remember Baron Corbin found out he was going to be in that Battle Royal, like, on either Friday or Saturday night. And so, like, we're kind of seeing, wait, and then Friday passes, Saturday passes, and we don't get told anything. We're like, oh, damn, like, maybe it's not our time, which we were fine with. We were happy in NXT, so. But then Sunday morning, we're all getting dressed up to go as a group, as NXT to WrestleMania. We get a call from TR to meet them in Gorilla at WrestleMania, and then that's when we were told. So that was it was kind of cool to be in, like, I think it was my first time actually in the Gorilla position at a WrestleMania, which it's like a weird small thing, but it's like, yeah, that's kind of a cool, it was kind of a cool little environment to be told what's going to happen. So I mean, that was the goal, man. It was incredibly exciting.
Now, I did watch your interview with Louis Dangor, and you talked about the accident that happened with Enzo Amore. So I encourage people to check that out. But I'm interested to hear if you have seen, are aware of, or know about the most infamous YouTube video of all time that pops up in everybody's recommendations. Simon Gotch buries Enzo Amore.
I probably did. I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm sure it's popped up, and I'm sure I've watched it. It's been a while, but I'm sure I did.
Like, that thing, it's like the running joke of anybody who uses YouTube. Like, that thing pops up. It's got 1.4 million views. Like, right now, if Roman Reigns does a segment on Raw, WWE's lucky if their YouTube gets 1.4 million for that. And that's not a shot at Roman Reigns. Can I get you to just bury somebody? You can bury Big Cass if you want.
Oh, God, why would I want? I love Big Cass. I mean, I'll bury my cat who wakes me up at 2 a.m.
Can it be called Big Cats? Can I like put,
yeah,
like Drama King Matt buries Big Cats, and I'm just gonna like misspell it on purpose that way it says Big Cass, and then I'll issue a retraction and say Big Cats.
Well, it's like you could just treat it like those fake Instagram accounts that look like Liv Morgan WWE,
yes,
but spelled with a W instead of a V or something like that. Yeah, just get him with the one spelling error.
Yeah, like that thing would pop up all the time, and everybody knows about it. The guy that does Botchamania, I saw him at in Vegas last year, and he had a shirt with the thumbnail printed on it that says Simon Gotch buries Enzo Amore.
Of course he did.
And then, wisely, the people that interviewed Enzo after he left, they got him to bury Simon Gotch, so now that one's got like 500,000 views. It's all about SEO. It's all about search engine optimization. Oh,
yeah. It's click, click, click. Click through.
I heard a theory, and I don't know if you would agree with this. And I mean, you're familiar with SEO, right? Search engine optimization, sure. All that. Somebody had pitched the idea that WWE is doing this greatest wrestling match ever with Orton and Edge. That way, when you search, what is the greatest wrestling match ever? WWE Backlash 2020 comes up, and I'm like, you know what? That's brilliant, because Okada Omega isn't going to come up anymore.
Yeah.
It's going to be Edge and Orton. I was like, that's some next level stuff.
Hey, I mean, that's the people. I mean, their departments, the tax, social, that's where it's at, man. You got to get those searches, get those clicks. I mean, my thing is, I'm pretty convinced, and this is kind of a dive off, but I've always been convinced if it doesn't happen in the next 10 years, I will be shocked. But I think television ratings are going to go away. Mm-hmm. I think Nielsen is going to maybe be around in some, but I think advertising dollars are going to be spent on trending hashtags and things like SEO and stuff like that. So TV ratings, I think, are going to get less and less important. So everyone talking about, oh, Raw, lowest numbers ever. It's like, yeah, maybe, but there's 8 billion things to watch right now. So, but people are still talking about XYZ a ton, yeah, on the internet, and eyeballs are there. So that's where I think all advertising and media is going.
That's why I look at like Facebook views, YouTube views for Raw, SmackDown, stuff like that, because it gives me a nice indication of who's going out of their way to see what in particular, or like as opposed to the quarter hours, when realistically not every segment actually starts and ends on the quarter hour. So it's hard for me to say, oh, well, this segment lost this, when it didn't start and end at that time. It could have been any number of variables that contribute to that. How interactive were WWE's social media team or people with you guys? Like, were there anything that they were like, okay, yeah, we want you to put this out there, we don't want you to put this out there?
I mean, it would depend. Most often it was just, I mean, if they needed you, like if you were taking part in some kind of media campaign, say you helped film a commercial for Snickers or something like that, they might be like, hey, the campaign launches on Friday, could you just please do a tweet? And like, they would never, like, nobody's ever saying you have to send this tweet. It was always like, hey, here's a link. Just tell people to buy, you know, check out the commercial and enjoy Snickers or something like that. And then obviously the more kind of stuff you were doing with that, the better. Occasionally, if it was part of the TV program, we're like, hey, we want to kind of get this match set up via Twitter, like we sometimes do, like challenge accepted kind of tweets and stuff like that. You were obviously given that. They would either see you at TV or call you or text you, things like that. But it was pretty loose-handed if it was.
On your own personal social media, have you muted the word Milwaukee yet?
No, man. Milwaukee, I love it, man. Oh, God. That was like C-movie gold. You just got to embrace it.
We were trying to think of conspiracy theories on our post show, and we were like, is he going to reveal that Lana joined the Kenosha Kickers from Home Alone 1? They were on their way to Milwaukee in that movie. Like, that's what happened. John Candy has something to do with this. Unfortunately, it didn't play out like that. But, I mean, Rusev Day was one of the highlights of SmackDown every single week, and I've heard you mention on other interviews how organically that got over. That was a part of it, because like, I got early access to one of those calendars they put out. They didn't even put them out till February, but they were like, we got to get these out now. We don't care that we're a month into the year. This is hot right now. Let's do it. How did that feel when you were a part of something like this?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That was, I want to say categorically different than the vaudevillains, but obviously a major performance aspect there too. How did that feel when you were like, okay, this is catching fire?
I mean, it was unreal. Like, that was the coolest thing. That was the first time in my career. Like, and people loved the vaudevillain stuff. You know, they got into it. But going out, I mean, on live events and, like, especially, like, internationally and stuff like that, going out and having everybody either cheer or boo or whatever it was, and, like, just every word you're saying and then hanging on it, it's an unreal feeling.
How often do you have people that... I mean, maybe you've monetized this as well, that ask you to do their intros, that ask you to do voicemails, that ask you to do this and that, because that is now an iconic entrance.
I mean, that's my whole pitch for, like, my cameo page.
Yeah.
Thing or whatever. It was just like, hey, man, yeah, make any day your day, you know. But no, tons of personal video messages and friends who've had kids or something who are fans. And so I've recorded, God, hundreds of, like, happy birthdays and insert someone's name. It's a ton of fun.
I love that Cameo is taken off. By the way, Cameo, I'm not plugging them, but you've got one, so I'll plug it. But I've had people like Matt Hardy say, like, yeah, this is a major revenue stream for me at this point. And for people like you or Matt Hardy that have those type of characters that were so verbal in execution, man, that's an awesome avenue for fans to be able to go down.
Oh yeah. It's just this growing digital marketplace. It makes everything so easy and stuff like that. And yeah. Just a simple way to get, like, that was something so unfathomable even 10 years ago,
yeah.
15, like, hey, for a couple bucks or whatever it is, like, I can get almost any celebrity to, like, say my name and say happy birthday or good luck or whatever it is. Like, it's such a simple concept, but we just never saw it executed until now.
And it was even around a few years ago with, like, Celeb VM or whatever it was. But Cameo, right. Cameo was really smart, and they marketed it really well and just made it blow up. You and Rusev obviously blew up, one of the more popular acts on SmackDown. That experience working with Rusev and Lana, it came to an end, but you all had a fantastic run. When they had told you, hey, it is coming to an end, how did you feel about that? Do you think there was still more meat on the bone there?
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. And we all thought so. I know me and Rusev, absolutely. We wanted to ride that thing till the wheels fell off. And I really thought we could have had something. I've said this before. I'm not going to besmirch them at all. Like, sure. Something akin to, like, a New Day thing. Like, here are these guys with these super kind of over the top characters coming from, they came in and were heels, but they were so entertaining, they became baby faces and they had a lot of longevity. And I thought, well, not the same thing. I'm like, here we are, we're presented as these bad guys, but people are into our act. Maybe we could bounce back and forth as time goes on and stuff like that. I'm like, I think there's a lot of longevity here. So we both really wished it would have been able to have a longer life form.
Yeah, the stuff you all did with New Day was some of my favorite stuff that was going on there. Even, like, to your match with Xavier on TV. I can't remember what tournament it was, but I feel like it was in a tournament. I just, when I saw those two acts on TV, it's like, all right, there might be titles on the line, there might be this, there might be that. This is going to be entertaining. Like, I just knew that there was going to be entertaining things. And for Rusev, that I feel like that helped open up his range an awful lot, because we didn't see a lot of that side until he was with you all. And that seems like what made him more popular than anything, was that side of him coming out. Was that something that he was, like, aching to do, or was he nervous to do that?
No, I think Miro, dude, that's Miro. You know what I mean? Like, I've known him since FCW, and, like, he's this big, gregarious, funny guy, jokes all the time and everything like that. So yes, I mean, he was dying to be able to do something like that.
And Lana had some acting experience too. I mean, was that something that you all ever talked? Did you all ever, like, talk acting experience or stage work or anything?
No, not really. Cause I mean, I had done a lot of, like, theater, and mm-hmm. she had done mostly, like, film and, like, TV stuff. So no, it never really came up because, and plus we were just so busy and so much having fun making all those segments.
Yeah, I remember like the cast of Pitch Perfect would show up in LA and support her at SummerSlam. I was like, that's pretty cool. That's cool. And I'm surprised WWE never capitalized on stuff like that, like Lana's appearing in Pitch Perfect and all that stuff. I was always very surprised about that. Now, as I go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just saying, no, I know, I agree. I remember I tried to get, I tried to start a Twitter war with another Pitch Perfect star, that Skylar Astin, for WrestleMania when we were in New Orleans. I was trying to get something like that on television.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's a big wrestling and MMA fan. Huge. I remember.
Huge.
I hear him talk about MMA an awful lot. He used to be on like Ariel Helwani's show and stuff and talk about that. So the split happens and the feud happens. Even I thought the feud like could have been longer. It could have, like, I felt like everything could have been drawn out and made just a little bit better because we were all so emotionally invested in you guys as personalities and performers and all that. Like, we didn't just want to see it go away. And if it was going to go away, we wanted a big reason why. We wanted a big explanation why. And were there any other pitches along the way? Did anybody say, yeah, maybe we should keep them together or maybe we should draw this out?
I mean, I don't know. Like I said, we had kind of fought together about, like, can we keep this going? Can we keep this going? But it was just came down from on high, you know, that, you know, it's coming to an end. And it was like, okay, we tried and that's fine. But I remember, all right, if it's going to end, I'm like, all right, well, let's do something big with it. Let's make it count. And I remember I had a lot of ideas for how I could take that and, like, make it work for me and for both of us and, like, have a chance for me to expand my character after that. It's just some things fly and some things don't. And unfortunately, a lot of the ideas I had just kind of kept hitting brick walls.
What kind of experiences did you have with Vince McMahon personally, if any? I mean, I've heard that he's even tougher to get in contact with, so to speak. I heard a story about how Randy Orton, of all people, was supposed to have a contract meeting with him in April. He didn't really get to have it until, like, October. And I'm like, that's Randy Orton. That's Randy Orton, yeah. Man. Did you have much experience in dealing with him interpersonally, whether it be feedback on the promos, the vignettes, or anything?
Not as – it's like we're like a little bit. Not as much as I wanted, and also that I should have made – time for. Like, it is, you hear a lot from guys. I mean, he's number one, it's Vince McMahon. It's intimidating just on who he is alone. Then he's incredibly busy, especially in television, is one chance you get with him one time a week because it's the only time you're going to see him. So he's really busy. He's trying to get the show together. He's super passionate. So, like, sometimes, you know, he's all involved in this segment trying to make it work so he doesn't have time to talk with everyone, or he's in meetings with writers. But by the way, he's still the CEO, so he's got phone calls from that stuff going on. So knocking on that door and getting in that room in one television day, which is already busy, is really hard. But I will say the guys who are more very successful make it a point to get that rapport and get that regular contact. That's something on me that I wish I would have tried a little harder at, I'll be honest. But I did get a couple of chances of kind of having one-on-ones with him. And all I have to say is, like, once you're in there, once you can get that time, once that's the hardest part, figuring out. Once you're in that room with him, eye to eye, he's intense. And if he's feeling strong about something, he doesn't mince words.
Yeah.
But he's on the level. He's real. He tries to make whatever he can work for you. And he's just a guy at the end of the day. Like, that sounds so cheesy and banal, but he is. He's, once you're talking to him, he's not so intimidating. It's just getting in there and breaking that ice and getting it started.
So many people know about your real life marriage to Shaw Guerrero, who is a fantastic performer in her own right. Was there ever any thought about integrating that on screen? Because I remember somebody gave me a request one time. They're like, how would you book Aiden English? And I was like, well, man, I would play into that. You've got a family full of performers and he's an outstanding performer in his own right. Like, there are unlimited resources there, and I don't know many people who could pull off that type of range like you could, from intimidating to intimidated. And, like, was there ever any thought about trying to make something like that happen?
So we've discussed it back and forth, but, you know, both when she was still in the business and, like, even just after, just like, is that something we'd ever want to do? Like, and the one thing I'll say in entertainment, especially in wrestling, never, ever say never. I'll say that first. So the possibility is always there. I always went back and forth on it. You know, the people who worked with their spouses, and I think it's great if you can, but I always am a huge fan of those, trying to find balance in my life. And the one thing I would always be worried about is just like, I don't want my work, like, I don't want our at-home life to just become about work.
Sure.
I like that little bit of that separation. Like, now we're home, I don't want to have to be planning our, like, our characters and what do we want to be saying or our promo next week and stuff. It's kind of nice to have that separation. So for the people who can do that, fantastic. And maybe with the right, you know, setup and effort, we could do that too. But I always like to keep a little bit of that work-life balance. Sure.
I remember somebody, I think it was you had been on a TV losing streak, and they're like, oh, well, how could they turn it around? And I was like, well, if Chavo is willing to come on TV, him saying, you represent our family now, you better not lose. I was like,
oh, God.
Damn. Like, that's a
Don't
thing.
Don't put that pressure on me, real or fake. Oh, my God.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing. It's like he intimidates you into winning all these matches, and you're like, I'm not messing with that family. Like, I don't want to upset the family in wrestling. Like, I just thought there were such cool things there. And like I mentioned, Shaw is such a good performer, too. That was the thing that she always had a knack for. I was really happy to see her do some more stuff. I think she came back for the Ladies' Night Out stuff for Title Match Wrestling and did some ring announcing there, which I always loved those shows as well. But you kind of expanded, did some commentary. How were you informed that you'd be heading to the commentary booth?
So that was simply an option presented to me. And that's something people don't always understand. Everyone, you know, was asking, are you hurt? Are you retired? You know, is someone punishing you? Those are the three questions always coming up. But no, quite simply, Tom Phillips had come to me and thought, he said, hey, man, I think you'd be good at this. Do you want to give it a shot? I'm like, I'm not telling you not to wrestle, but I just come down to the PC and try it with me sometime. And that was right after like the Rusev Day stuff. And so like, I wasn't really doing much at the time. And so I'm like, we talked about, I like doing something. I got to stay busy. And so when you're at those times, when you're kind of on a dip creatively, I'm looking for something to do. And this looks, you know what, let me sink my teeth into something. So I went to the PC and called a couple matches and stuff. Thought it went well and figured, all right, that's it. I'll see you maybe in 6 months. We'll do this again. And then sure enough, the next week at TV, Michael Cole says, we're going to put you on 205 Live for the next few months and we'll see how it goes. And I went, okay.
And you were really positively received. How did you feel about getting that type of instant reaction where people were like, okay, I like what this guy's doing here?
It was great. And one of the best parts about it was you got not only like feedback just from the audience and people saying, hey, I like what you're doing, but it's one of the few teams in wrestling where you get direct feedback just like from your coworkers and your superior, which in my case was Michael Cole. So I've said this before, but as a wrestler, it can sometimes be tough because there's producers, there's writers and everything like that. But at the end of the day, the boss man is making all the final calls, Vince McMahon. And like I said, sometimes it's hard to get to him. And if he's your direct superior, it can be frustrating to not get that feedback. So here I am doing commentary, and every single week, Michael Cole is literally in Gorilla listening. He's feeding me some notes. He's talking to us afterward. I have his phone number. I can, you know, Tom Phillips is also like an assistant manager for on-air talent. So he's telling me, we're watching tape together. So it was this kind of refreshing, like, oh, I'm getting constant like feedback, what to do, what not to do, how to get better. And so people like that helped me. Vic Joseph, Nigel McGuinness were huge. God, I love those guys so, so much. I can't say enough good things about that whole team, but those two guys who helped break me in especially. But yeah, just had a really great environment from a professional standpoint.
A few months later, you got the call to do Worlds Collide, and you worked with Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero. That series was so cool. Like, I liked that. It created a lot of matches that I didn't think that I would see, and you hadn't been in the ring for a couple of months. Is that your most recent match at this point?
Yeah, technically it is.
Wow. So first off, when's the last time you ever, you've never went over a year without wrestling, right?
No, not since, I mean, since I started in what, 2011? So yeah, the last 9 years. No.
And you made it clear on Twitter that your in-ring career is not over. I remember people would ask you and you just put, no, it's not over. Because, you know, like you said, a lot of people would think, are you hurt? What might have happened? So at that point, did you think that you were still going to be in the ring pretty regularly when they asked you to do Worlds Collide?
I didn't know. So I remember, like you said, the way it started was basically Tom and Michael had said, you'll be on 205 Live between, at that point, it was January and WrestleMania. And we'll see what happens. He goes, and after that, if you want to stick with it, you can keep going. Or if you want, you know, want to be done with us, that's totally cool. Let's just try this out. And so they were saying I could still wrestle at the time. But once I kind of started doing the commentary, unbeknownst to me or whatever, they stopped booking me on live events. And I wasn't obviously wrestling on television. So I was like, okay, I think they kind of have me in this category now, which at the time I was fine because I was really embracing the opportunity. Yeah. But then, the Worlds Collide thing kind of came out of the blue. I was expecting just to be calling matches and doing that stuff all week for WrestleMania. And so I was like, oh, that's cool. I loved the opportunity because I'm like, all right, yeah, I am still itching to wrestle again. So I didn't know what that meant, like, in the large scheme of things. I think it was always just seen as a one-off, but I always find that match funny because that was all billed as NXT past versus present. But I was in NXT with Cassius Ohno in 2012, so, like, we're both kind of like NXT past, even though I know he came back, but
that's
I just
awesome.
Always thought that was kind of funny. I'm like, couldn't we each, like, can he wrestle somebody, like, really old? I don't know. It just seemed a little odd to me.
Yeah, that's weird for me to think that you all were both there in 2012. Like, that didn't even really cross my mind. That's pretty awesome.
He came into FCW, like, 3 weeks after I did.
Oh, wow.
So we were, like, started together.
That is amazing how that all unfolds. Well, this year, unfortunately, you and Rusev were both part of some of the downsizing. What kind of feedback did you get there, or did you get any? I get the feeling you all are on good terms. I never hear you say anything really bad about WWE. I don't hear anybody in WWE say anything bad about you. So, I mean, it seems like there's still a very amicable relationship there.
Yeah, no, there's no hard feelings, and there's no anything like that. You kind of heard all the news that day. I mean, tons, not just the on-screen talent, but furloughs, you know, mm-hmm. employees being let go, corporate, behind-the-scenes stuff, too. So, like, it affected everybody. I don't think there was a single person, both again, in front of and behind the camera, who was like anyone who was let go because, all right, we just don't like this or don't have anything for these people. It was just, I know the people who were letting people go, and I talked to them on that day and stuff like, and that was a hard day for them.
And
that's for people who's pretty regular part of their job is to inform people of stuff like that, but that one where it was so kind of boom and holy crap, we're doing this many people. It was a hard day for everybody there.
And Rusev was one of them gone. I mean, he had been very, very clear about contract disputes in like over the last few months. And much like you, he's going to be a guy that succeeds in whatever he tries to do. There's when you've got that type of personality, it really shines through. He's involved in Twitch. You're involved in Twitch. Are we going to see any crossover? Any crossover here?
Hey, I love the idea. I got to get a lot better at Call of Duty though before something like that happens, because I have tried it and I have died within the first 10 seconds probably every time I drop in. So, but the possibility is absolutely there.
So you're like Mickey Rourke and the wrestler playing Call of Duty.
If I'm lucky.
Yeah, like it's and Twitch is another avenue. It's like, can't believe this wasn't around 10 years ago type of thing. You're involved in that. You've got YouTube. How has this adjustment been? I mean, I know you were doing some YouTube stuff even like a year ago. You were doing Q&As. I remember covering those. How has that adjusted in the last couple of months for you?
For me, it's picked up just because after I got released and then in conjunction with just being at home from all the pandemic stuff, obviously, it kind of forced me. I'm like, all right, well, let's look into other hobbies or avenues or different things we can do. So I just jumped into the kind of, I loathe the term content creator because it's been so overused. But that kind of an angle, you know, what I'm going to keep really dive into my whiskey stuff, into the YouTube, into the Instagram. I do love games and I've never really embraced it. Now I've got more time. So jumping onto the Twitch thing, doing all kinds of stuff. I really do get a kick out of it. I enjoy that kind of work. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. And it seems like you're doing well at it. There are so many different opportunities right now. Again, I hate the term too, but to create content and get yourself out there, that if there were people that were like, you know what, I wanted to see more of Aiden English on WWE programming, they can tune in and see Matt all the time. They can see you talk about things that you're passionate about. They can see you play games that you're passionate about, or maybe that you're terrible at and die at in 10 seconds too. I mean, that can be a benefit. I had somebody watch me try to win a wrestling match as The Miz on 2K for 2 hours one night. It was very difficult. It was very difficult. Not surprised they're taking a year off of that game after playing it for a while. But, like, are there any things that in this time off you have come to learn, damn, I'm really passionate about this? Because as we've mentioned, when you find a passion, you jump into it.
So, I mean, like I said, so the whiskey thing I've just embraced even more and just spreading it, not only just whiskey, like spirits in general, mezcals, tequilas, rums, gins, things like that. So that's a whole thing. But the funny thing, like jumping into this Twitch thing, so like I love, like a lot of people, I love gaming in general. Like I've always been a PlayStation guy and stuff. But as I've gone into this, it hasn't started yet, but you will. I'm like, this is bringing out my inner like tech geek. Like I love like toys, like equipment, setups, lighting, you know, desks, monitors, microphone. Like I nerd out so hard after having a cool setup, a cool TV, well, everything, you know, well designed. So as I start to build that, I started another YouTube channel.
Tell us about it.
I literally just started it like last week. So the web address is still literally like Y2Feet36XYZ. But if you look up Drama King Matt on YouTube, I've got like two videos, but that's going to document my like Twitch and tech journey, nice. Like how I'm going to set up my new room. And when I get into building a PC or something like that, I'm both excited and intimidated to do. Like,
yeah.
I'll document that stuff. So like, that's another thing that I'm going to have fun diving into.
I mean, look at people like Stevie Richards. Like, I wouldn't have expected him to be so into tech stuff and even yoga. And I see him posting stuff all the time. And he's got a great following as a result. I'm with you. Like, the setups, we're moving next year, so I don't want to invest too much in this office. But, like, when people that were on my fight team or wrestling team come over, they see three monitors and a TV. And one of them said I had the Zordon setup from Power Rangers. And I was like, damn, I do. I feel like I'm about to assign somebody like a mission or something like that.
Hell yeah.
I like to leave on a positive note. So as we wrap up, what WWE producers stood out to you as somebody that specifically helped you, like maybe something that like it helped click with you, maybe somebody that maybe gave you some more guidance than one of the others?
Oh God, I've had so many, and I'm going to include like, because it was such, I'm going to include NXT trainers in that too, just because it was such a big part and like they produced so much great shows.
You can bury them too, if you want, it'd be a great headline.
Yes. Aiden English buries Norman Smiley.
Yes.
Something no one has ever said in the history of wrestling.
The Big Wiggle was terrible.
No, I'm going to start with him just because he set my career on the path. It is like he's the one that told me, hey, I can't make any promises and everything, but whatever he said obviously resonated with someone, and he's the reason I'm here. And then even after that, continued to be one of the most positive and intelligent and well-spoken and most just giving men that I've ever had the ability to train under. Guys like, I mean, Arn Anderson was great. I had a great relationship with Billy Gunn. when he was at NXT, he had such a great approach to teaching that I thought, that I think is very, very important. He kind of showed you how to have fun with it all. And I'm going to say this almost begrudgingly, and if he sees this, he'll know why, but I have a love for Terry Taylor.
Okay.
Who a lot of people have butted heads with, and I did too, because like he can be very opinionated, and he comes from that old school kind of mindset. Mm-hmm. But it's so funny. He's like your parents, because mm-hmm. He's sitting there, he's raising you as a wrestler, and you're fighting your, no, why can't I do this? Why is it a bad idea? Why are you telling me it's not a good idea to do this? I think that's crazy. That's so old. That's from your generation. And you grow up and you go and you perform on all these stages and you go, I'm still right, but hot damn, he was right about X, Y, and Z. You're like, crap.
That's what Moxley told me about Michael Hayes. He said that I thought I was right so much and he proved me wrong so many times. And I was like, damn. And he said that he learned a lot doing that.
Yes, exactly. And you're like, and some of it you're not going to learn until you just have enough experience, or you go out in those situations. You're like, oh, holy crap! Like they were right. So that was a big eye opening thing for me. So I do appreciate everything from him.
Well, let the people know where all they can find you, because, like I said a few times, you've got a lot going on right now. There were some people that were disappointed because I'm a Kentuckian and I don't know a thing about bourbon.
You can log on to YouTube and I can teach you an awful lot.
That's where 100% of my bourbon and whiskey knowledge comes from, is from your YouTube, because I've never drank. But obviously where I am, I mean, I'm literally 20 minutes from Bourbon County. So like it's big out here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's true. There are more barrels of bourbon aging in Kentucky than there are humans.
I'm not surprised. I could step outside and scream, and there are people that will hear me, but they won't care. But if they see a barrel of bourbon rolling down the road, they're going to make sure that thing's saved.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
That's how it is out here. But yeah, you got a lot of cool stuff. I've loved seeing the stuff that you're producing too. Like even visually, I got to admit, bourbon's very pretty. So I see all your thumbnails and I'm like, damn, that makes me want to watch it.
You got to. I mean, I got to keep up with it. There's a lot of it, like bourbon, like Instagram pages and YouTubes, and the production values are pretty high. I'm like, holy crap, like people are working at this. I got to catch up.
Oh, yeah, that's the same thing in the wrestling game. Like, I can break all the news I want, but I got to put it in a pretty video now. I'm like, damn. Now I see why my major switched from journalism to convergent media when I was in college. They wanted you to kind of handle all that stuff. But they can obviously follow you at Drama King Matt. Do you have a unique Twitch URL or anything like that?
No, it's pretty much Drama King Matt or Wrestling with Whiskey anywhere.
Yeah.
You'll end up finding me. Drama King Matt is Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube. And then Wrestling with Whiskey, same thing. Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and and there, I got a Patreon where I'm doing some exclusive videos and some extra fitness content. So that's under Wrestling with Whiskey as well.
Guys, check him out. Matt, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. I did not expect to take up so much of it, but thank you for being so awesome. I could ask you like a million things. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
Until next time, guys, we're out.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.